Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events on this fine day of Tuesday, October 29th, 2013. The first segment today, we're going to talk a little about GM shares. Are you making any money? Is the Fed making any money? We're going to talk about some hackers. On the second segment today, we'll talk a little bit more about Obamacare, and third segment, we'll be talking about banking sentiment. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, about do the bank deposits belong to you? We'll talk about that a little bit more today. If you have any questions, 1-800-596-8191. That's 1-800-596-8191. Give us a call with your question. We'd love to hear from you. Let's get right to the markets today. As we all know, we're wanting to know what gold and silver has done today. We're looking at the gold. Gold down $8 at $1,346. We have silver up 2 pennies, though, today at $22.64. Platinum was down 11, had a big day yesterday at $14.67, and palladium was down $2 today at $750. Interesting to see gold only down $8 today. You thought they would have hit it with the for 2 days, and of course we just finished out option expiration dates. There's always a little bit of pressure. So they had an opportunity to really hit gold, and I think it only being down $8 just shows that the strength that it really does have. So with that, we're going to look at the USDX today. That's trading a lot stronger today, and as usual, because of the FOMC meetings, up 31 at 79.64, but still below the 80 level. Crude oil today was basically unchanged, 98.27, down a couple pennies, down 41 points. And the paper markets, and of course, again, knowing that the Fed is going to continue with the stimulus, the Dow ended at a record high, and after 111-point gain, it sets its third straight record close, and not a lot of reporting or talk about the NASDAQ, as that was closed down for about an hour and a half today. A human error, I guess we can call it a human glitch, but and again, it's happening a little bit more frequent, and again, hey, I wouldn't want to be there. you know, with all these computers and digits, that's how safe your money is if you're in paper. But the Dow, again, up 111 points at 15,680. The NASDAQ up 12 at 3952. S&P up almost 10 points. They're all below 1%. The S&P was only up a little bit over a half a percent at 1771. And you have the 10-year yield. That's still hanging out about 2.51%. Not a lot of change. And you think with a little bit more strength in the dollar, you probably see a little bit more weakness in that yield. But again, not a lot of change there. Consumer sentiment came out today. I'll have to look up the numbers. I don't have it right in front of me, which is I was reading a very good article someone sent me on the on chemtrails. And it was a very, very good, very good article. I got involved in reading that and didn't post my consumer sentiment for today. But it was down considerably, and most of it was pegged because of the consumer, because of government shutdown. So, you know, I guess it might be back up next month. Who knows? People have short days. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody. I think we're having a problem with the sound. I think we're getting some blackouts periodically. They only last for a couple of seconds, but it appears that sound disappears for a couple of seconds every so often, and I don't know if it's your fault, my fault, but I believe Frank probably, producer, he's the one who's responsible for this.
We'll just continue. If it happens until the first break, then we'll go ahead and change. Today, Al, the Fed's reported a $9.7 billion loss on the GM shares, booked almost a $10 billion loss on the $50 billion bailout for General Motors, and on the sale of nearly all of its shares. It received as part of the bailout. This was a report today, a quarterly report to Congress. The special inspector seeing the $700 billion TARP bailout fund disclosed. So they have that significant loss. And what's interesting, as I told you prior to the program, I saw articles where we should be, you know, America should be thankful that the government bailed out GM and that there is only a $10 billion loss. But that loss was put to some good. It saved a lot of people jobs, saved a lot of businesses continue to function, and those people were able to pay taxes. And
that's what life is all about, Melody.
If there's no matter what happens,
please, whatever happens, Melody, don't do anything to stop me from paying taxes, because that's what it means to be an American. Get out there and give that money to the government. Your government does so much for so many. They nearly destroyed this nation, in fact. But other than that, their heart is in the right place. So we need to give them every dime we possibly can.
I think for those people who feel that the bailout was needed and, it's only $10 billion, why don't they pay back that $10 billion, since the $10 billion loss helped them, didn't help me, didn't help you.
No, I agree.
Many people,
and
so
even
those
if
people, those businesses, Detroit should pay back.
Even if we had a serious problem, and the money was not given to General Motors, and by failing to give General Motors that money, perhaps we precipitate a deeper recession in this country. That's not necessarily a bad thing. Everyone is convinced that recessions are a terrible thing and depressions are even awful. I remember my folks talking about the Depression, the Great Depression. And every time they talked about it, oh, it was hard, it was this, it was that. But every time I saw them talk about it, their faces always lit up. They got through it. They lived okay. I know that some people suffered. My folks weren't rich people. I guarantee they put their car up on blocks. You understand, they weren't married at the time during the Great Depression, but their car was up on blocks. They couldn't afford to drive the car. They were, you know, they had their little stories and all that. But the purpose of the Depression is not simply some sort of a mistake. It's a way to flush out all the con artists, all the frauds, all the excess out of the economy. The Depression removes us from the lies that have been foisted off on us during the boom. We get into the boom cycle and everybody's, yay, I'm going to get rich. I'm going to invest in the stock market because the stock market is going up. And then all of a sudden comes to 1929. And what happens is the stocks go down and the market goes down and the economy goes down. And what it does, it's not just, you know, some sort of a mathematical failure or an oversight. It is as much a natural part of life as sweating, all right, or urinating or defecating. You got to get the crap out of your system periodically, and the only way you get it out is with depression and recession. And therefore, it's kind of a healing process. It's a painful medicine. It's an unpleasant medicine, I'll give you that, but it is a medicine. It's not a trauma. It's a medicine for the nation. Difficult stuff, but... And the point behind all of this is if that analysis is correct, then whatever the government does to postpone, avoid having a recession, having a depression, all of that is contrary to our health. We have to go through it because we do stupid things. We are not the first generation to do stupid things. We won't be the last one to do stupid things. And you have to pay that price periodically. When you do, then ta-da, then you get started up again. And you hope you won't be stupid, but you probably will. In any case.
Here's a conspiracy for you, Al. Three mysterious structures that appeared on the water in California and Maine have the tech world abuzz. Each of the boxy structures sits atop a barge and looks like a four-story building made up of metal boxes. Little is known about them, but they appear to have been registered by someone familiar with geek speak and with a sense of humor. The structures are registered with a Delaware corporation. In binary code used in computing, the numbers spell out 1, 2, 3, and 4. Currently, number 1 and 2 are in San Francisco. Number 3 is Portland Harbor. Online speculation is focused on Google Inc., which has a patent for a floating data center that uses ocean water for cooling. Neither Google nor the company outfitting the vessel shed any light on the matter today. Alien?
Space alien?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
I doubt that they're space aliens. I don't think the space aliens are on barges per se. But hard to say what this is. It might be something from Google. That's the speculation. It may be some glorified casinos, Melody. Maybe Bally Manufacturing and some others have decided to open up new and improved casinos on barges out in major cities and try to round up a few more techs. A few more gambling dollars.
My question is, why would these be mysterious? You would think that the piers in our harbors should not be that secret.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point because we've got Homeland Security and we have TSA and the rest of that who are allegedly protecting us from terrorist threats. Now, who's to say there's not an atomic bomb concealed in the guts of these three mysterious barges? Who has inspected these barges and why is it we don't yet know what they are?
Good question.
You know what it reminds me of?
It's space aliens. What?
Nah, I don't think it's space aliens. I think we've got enough aliens in this country without going to space aliens. And besides, the space aliens would probably have better sense. They're probably moving to Mars and saying, that place is crazy. That Earth is nuts. We're going to Mars where we can actually get some rest. What was I going to say? I don't remember exactly. Doesn't cross my mind, but it is interesting that they are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the mystery. A lot of people probably, some people in the audience won't be old enough to remember this, but do you remember the old Folgers commercials back in probably the 1960s, maybe the 1970s? I'm going to bring a mountain to Chicago. And nobody knew what Folgers was at the time. And the ad was, we're going to bring a mountain to Chicago. And we're going to bring a mountain to New York. And what was it? It was a big mystery. It turned out to be a mountain of coffee is what they were talking about. But it was part of their sales technique, and it was part of their, you know, their sales advice, and everybody, what is Folgers, and what's this? Maybe you're getting a dose of that from these three barges. Hard to say.
It'll be interesting to find out what it is, but, you know, about consumer confidence, how it plunged to a low level since April, and of course, I have the numbers here. It actually dropped to 71.2 in October, down from 80.2 the previous month. September's figure was slightly higher than initially.
Pretty big drop in 1 month.
That's a big drop.
Yeah.
So again, and we all know that consumer confidence is a closely watched number because, hey, spending accounts for 70% of our economy. And
How long can that continue? You know, the truth of the matter, this is another one of these gross imbalances, the idea that the economy depends on spending. Well, yeah, it does. But it also depends on production. You know, it's like going to a general store in a little town out in the Wild West. All right, the business depends on people coming in to buy stuff. But the people coming in to buy stuff depend on things actually being there to be bought. You can't just live on the basis of, I'll spend and I'll spend and I'll spend, but I'll never produce anything. And that's what we've been doing to a significant degree in this country. We've been disproportionately spending and consuming rather than producing. And that imbalance, that just can't be, that can't continue. You know, you can't eat $50 worth of food every day if you're only earning $25 a day. You might be able to get away with it for a while, but the day is coming. You're going to go hungry.
Unless you're the Federal Reserve.
Even they may have a problem.
Yes, I know. They will.
You know, I mean, it's the kind of thing where we are at a point where a lot of rich people are going to sit back and say, well, we're covered, we're protected, I've got everything I need. Well, yeah, you've got it, but I guarantee you'll be a target, too. And those people that are super rich, they're going to have, you know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go to visit? Where are you going to ride around in your car? If worst case scenario, which is the least likely, but worst case scenario nevertheless is possible, you know, things get really violent. We're going to see more kidnappings. We're going to see, you know, God knows what we're going to see. No one is going to have a jeopardy-free life in the event of a worst-case scenario, anything close to the worst-case scenario. We are all going to pay a price on this thing. We will at least be uncomfortable. Some of us will be impaired. It's hard to say how far this is going to go and who's going to be hurt now, the rest of that, but some will do better than others. And those who are prepared will do better than others. Those who aren't prepared will do worse, but there will be so many people hurting. They're going to look for anybody they can find. You know, you're going to have to be very defensive about protecting, having something to protect yourself, and also being prepared to defend it. I saw an email just lately. Somebody wrote to all his friends, and he said, don't come to my house in the event of an economic collapse, because if you do, I'll kill you. All right? And he's writing this to his friends. He said, you know, he's been prepping. He's one of these preppers. He's been storing up food and ammunition, gold and silver and whatever, for years. And everybody knows it. And all of them joke about, well, you know, if we have a problem, I'm just going to Bob's house. And Bob's saying, no, you're not. I'll blow your heads off. All right? Because I'm going to take care of myself and my family, and I'm not here to take care of everybody else who just wants to come in for a free handout. So it illustrates a kind of mentality that we may see more of as time goes by. And if you want to survive, it's up to you to have what you need to survive. That's worst case scenario. Again, I'm not saying we're going to get to that. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but that is not impossible. It's not improbable. We could easily go through a trauma very similar to what struck the former Soviet Union after it fell apart and disintegrated, I think it was 1991, when the Soviet Union ceased to exist. 1991, I don't recall clearly. But the people paid a terrible price for at least a decade in what had been the Soviet Union. It was chaos, it was poverty, it was violence, it was a very rough situation. Not impossible. Happened there, not impossible that it could happen here. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. Going to take a break for a couple moments and some commercial announcements. We'll be right back here with Melody Cederstrom. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Countries have denied internet access for their people during civil strife. The FCC seized in-use commercial shortwave frequencies right after the September 11th attacks. No one communication system can be depended on to be there when you need information. You need choices. You need a Ku band free-to-air satellite system from AVR. The AVR system includes a receiver, an LNB, and a 75-centimeter dish. All you need to get on your own is the coaxial cable. The system is delivered to your door for $149.99. That's right, delivered for $149.99. That's the shipping and the system, $149.99. Call 541-225-4659. That's 541-225-4659. Or visit AmericanVoiceRadio.com and click satellite system. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hello.
Yes.
Why didn't Frank answer us?
I don't know.
That irritates. Frank, if you're listening. Well, that just sounded so much for a better program today.
Yeah, it's one of those things that gives the crowd something to be amused
about. Well, it doesn't help pay the bills, does it? It doesn't help pay the bills.
Yeah, you got to roll with the producers, Melody. That's just
no. And I get yelled at for not being professional, so I'm trying to do the best I can, and then everybody else fricks up.
Well, I didn't mess up. At least not in my own mind.
What's next?
Well, I don't know. We're going to wait until we hear from, and wait until the
next article.
Next article is probably Iran.
All right.
Frank says we are on the air, and we have a caller. All right. So surprise, surprise, Melody. You understand?
Why is he on?
We are on the air. We have a caller, and whatever's going on. I don't even know what's going on now.
Just talk to the caller.
Joe, Arkansas.
Hello, who are we talking to?
Yeah, well, this is Joe in Arkansas.
Yeah.
Hello, Joe, how you
Frank
doing?
And Melody. Yeah, what I called about is this. I know from time to time you do have guests on your show, and I would like to suggest a man that I think would make a very, very, very good guest, and his name is J.R. Martin, and he has written an excellent book, which I'm in the process of reading right now, called Selling Us Out, and the us is spelled U period S period. And I know Al does a really, really, really good job talking about how free trade, globalization, and so on like that, you know, has ruined the American economy and cost so many Americans their jobs and the good-paying jobs and so on like that. And this man, J.R. Martin, has written an excellent book on that whole subject about how our trade policies are ruining the country. And
sure.
I think he would make a very good guest if you would like to have him on your program.
Well, I'll tell you what. Do you have any contact information on this man? Or is it something we should
I believe he has a website, sellingusout.com or .org. I guess you would have to do a search on it, because he doesn't seem to have the website anywhere in the book. I know he does have that website, but it's sellingusout.com or .org. But if you put it into a search engine, I guess you could come up with it.
All right, we'll take a look. We appreciate your recommendation, Joe, and we'll look for J.R. Martin at Selling Us Out and see if we can track him down, and maybe we can reach him and get him on the program.
Yeah, very good. I'm glad if you do that. I've just come to one part in the book where he talks about, you know, a lot of people these days talk about the need for a third party. And I've just come to the part in the book where he talks about a third party that apparently has been recently formed called the Modern Whig Party. Apparently our founding fathers belonged to a party called the Whig Party, W-H-I-G, not W-I-G. And somebody has apparently revived this thing and started the Modern Whig Party, and I just read the platform, and it sounds very, very good. I've never heard of this party before, but I guess what it needs is some dynamic leader to push it into the front pages of national publicity, because it sounds like a good party. It needs some.
Well, you know, it might
good
be
people to make it.
It might
go.
Be a good idea. It might be a surprisingly good idea. I'm not familiar with the Whig Party, and it sounds like at first you first hear, the Whigs Party, for God's sake, how silly is that? But you have to admit, if that's what the party was, or at least one of the parties was, at the time that the American Revolution took place or shortly thereafter, these people, that party would have a system of values, a system of principles that might be just what we're looking for today. It might be the ideas that we are hoping to return to, and therefore a third party along those lines might have a surprising, it's always tough to sell a third party, but I've looked at it myself, and I've thought for a long time about trying to get a third party going. I'm not going to get into it right now to speak of, but the mathematics makes it very much easier than most people suppose. Because you could get a viable third party. You could take this country back if you had a third party that attracted 1/6 of the eligible voters. You don't need half. You need 1/6. It can be enough. All right? A fifth, and they're there. I guarantee 20% of the American people agree with the ideas that we talk about on this program. And Joe, I'm sure it's the kind of ideas that you are sympathetic to. And it's at least 20% of the country, and it's probably more like 60%. But they don't think a third party is possible, and therefore, as long as no one believes it's possible, we're not going to have that third party, at least not a successful party. But mathematically, it's actually pretty easy. So what else, Joe? Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, well, from what I've read of the platform of this Modern Whig Party, it is pretty much exactly the same thing the Founding Fathers believed in, and pretty much exactly the same thing that I believe in. And I think what the majority of Americans actually believe in, because whenever I've gone door to door and, you know, taken signatures on some petition and talked to people about political issues, I've gotten an idea that about 60 to 70% of the people actually do really believe in the ideas of the Founding Fathers. But the media doesn't push it. There's not a lot of corporate money poured into promoting it. So they all feel kind of isolated on their own, and they don't feel like they're in the majority when really they are.
Yeah, I know. That's a very strange situation, and I've seen it in the past. We've seen where, well, I've asked for years, if a tree falls in the forest and CBS doesn't report it, did it make a sound? If we don't see it on the mainstream media, we don't think it's real. Even the information and the truth that we can find on the internet, for example, it's perhaps more persuasive than it was a decade ago. But even so, we have to see that mainstream media to give real credibility to a lot of ideas. And a majority of people, we don't see it on the mainstream media, so we think we're all alone. Because we think we're all alone, we're afraid to stand up and speak out. because we're afraid the majority of people will laugh. They'll point fingers at it and say, oh, look at that. You guys are crazy. You're lunatics. You're on the lunatic fringe. No, we're not. We are the majority of America. The lunatic fringe right now are the people and mainstream media that are supporting the insanity that's being perpetrated by our government. We're not the crazy ones. We're the ones that are trying to expose the crazy ones. So, it's one of those things. You do the best you can with what you've got, and then you let the good Lord handle it as He sees fit. What do you think, Joe? Do you think the good Lord's going to straighten this out, or do you think He's going to let it all go down?
I think the good Lord would like to see it straightened out, but I think the good Lord has given us free will, and is hoping that we'll grow up and straighten out our own affairs. I think the good Lord has given us the energy and the intelligence and understanding and the integrity, if we will use it, to straighten this out ourselves, if enough people will get busy using those gifts of the good Lord. But I don't think the good Lord directly himself is going to intervene and straighten this out. But I think he's given us everything that we need if we will make good use of his gifts to straighten it out ourselves.
Do you think he presents these problems to us as an opportunity to correct our problems? Or do you think he presents these situations as a test to see if we will make the necessary effort to correct our problems? Do you see the difference? Is it an opportunity or is it a test? It's an opportunity. You can kind of ignore it if you care to. It doesn't matter if it's a test. Then maybe you have to get busy and do something.
Well, I kind of tend to feel that the whole of life is a grand opportunity given us by the Creator to make the best of ourselves and accomplish the most good that we can, and to accomplish the most glorious and wonderful things that we possibly have the potential ability to do. I kind of think that the whole of life is an opportunity given to us by the Creator, and just what use we make of that opportunity is kind of up to us. I don't know if he specifically arranges tests for us. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. I just don't know the mind of the good Lord that closely to be able to say that, but I do think that life is a grand opportunity given to us by the good Lord, and hopefully we'll use the gifts of intelligence and free will that he has given us to make good use of it.
I understand. I agree with you. We can't know for sure what the good Lord thinks. I mean, we can suspect and we can speculate, but we don't know for sure what the good Lord thinks, what he wants. But, one man's test is another man's opportunity. And the question I'm trying to get to is, can we just sit back and ignore the opportunities, or are we required to actually proceed and perform under these tests? I'm inclined to think that it's some opportunity and some test. You can look at it both ways, but I'm inclined to see more test than opportunity. But I think you're more inclined to see opportunity than test. I don't know that either of us are right. But if there's anything else you got, go ahead and throw it at us right now, Joe. Now we'll move on.
Well, that reminds me of something that a friend of mine once told me many years ago, and that was that the reward of service is more service. So if you do something to serve the Lord, the reward of doing that, I believe, is that you get more opportunity to serve the Lord.
Yep.
I agree. And when you serve the Lord, that's what makes your life wonderful.
It's the parable of the talents. The good Lord gave five coins, or the master in the particular parable, he gave five coins to one of the servants, and he gave three to another, and one to the third. And the one with five coins went out, and he earned another five coins. And the master says, good and faithful servant, you've been faithful in a little. I'm going to give you more now. Next time you're going to have more than five coins to work with. We're going to let you work with 10 or 20 or whatever. And the third guy with three coins, same thing. And master comes with three coins, made three more coins. So he had six to give back to master. Master says, great. He says, good and faithful servant. And then he got to the one with one coin. And he was the one who said he knew that the master was a tough hombre, and he didn't want to take a chance on losing that one gold coin. So he buried it. And so he would be sure to have it and give it back to the master when the master returned. The master said, ho, 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 you wicked and faithless servant, you have failed to use the talent that I gave you. And the analogy, of course, they use talent to refer to coins, but the same thing applies to the talents the good Lord gives all of us in this life. If the analogy is true, if it has a spiritual foundation, it suggests that if you have talents, that you can go forth and do things and, you know, and serve the good Lord. And you don't do that, you're going to the place of wailing and gnashing teeth. That's what the parable said. So we'll watch and see. We will learn more as time goes on if the parable is true or false, if the good Lord really is operating under those principles. But I think he probably is. I think the parable is valid. You got to use the gifts that God gave you to serve the God that provided you with those gifts. It's really the way it should be done, and very few people get that or follow it. Joe, is there anything else, or can we turn you loose?
No, I'd like to get off now and let you get back to what you were originally planning to talk about. Thank you very much. Good chat.
All right, Joe, thank you. We appreciate
your
call. Yep, bye-bye. Here, one more. Go ahead, Melody.
Since we're kind of on the you were talking about the different parties and so forth,
mm-hmm.
This came across my desk. It's about sixth grade students from the Bryant School District in Arkansas was asked to throw out two amendments in the Bill of Rights as part of a Common Core History class assignment. The worksheet read, determined that it is outdated and may not remain in its current form any longer. The worksheet goes on to ask the students to prioritize, revise, omit to, and add to amendments to the Bill of Rights. Lila Spears, whose daughter brought the worksheet home, says this is her daughter's first assignment concerning the Bill of Rights and Constitution. After she brought it home and explained her assignment, it made her question exactly what she was being taught. She didn't even understand what the amendments meant. How can she make an informed decision when she doesn't understand what she's throwing out? The assignment also asked students to revise the Bill of Rights under a special task force, failing to mention the amendment process, which includes support from a two-thirds majority of the House and Senate. Funny thing, she was never told how the Bill of Rights is amended. I do not believe that amendment. She read through the handouts that the child was given, around six in total, and nothing about how an amendment is ratified. She believes that the wording of the assignment, many children will think that the Bill of Rights is amended and can be changed by a special committee instead of an act of Congress. She says that she knows her child will not think this is true, as she made it her mission to get her very involved in her education. But the Obama administration backed the Common Core State Standards Program, which supported in 45 states, and it has received some backlash from parents across the country. And there was a parent in Louisiana that was shocked after hearing her fourth grade son say pimp and mobstas, words that the mother found in her son's homework. The school did defend the assignment, and they also claimed that the words were appropriate.
Well, American education, if you want to educate your children and you have the opportunity at all, you want to do homeschooling.
Yeah.
All right. There's no question about it. They win the spelling contest. They know more. I saw where some kid 12 years old who was homeschooled recently got into college. It was 12 or 14. I don't recall. He's undoubtedly a brilliant child, but you aren't going to find any 12-year-olds coming through public schools who are going to college when they're hit age 13. Let's take a break. Another one. Let's see if we can get the aha. The music is here. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. Programs brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I don't actually know whether we do we or do we not, Melody? Is we is or is we ain't?
After today, everything is free. No, just kidding. Just kidding, everyone. I just want to remind listeners, we were running a special just on 1 ounce gold Canadian maple leaves, 1 ounce gold coins. We have a very limited supply at this extra special low price. That price would be $1,386. Please, for $1,386, regular price on these would be over $1,400. So they need to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Your name will be placed in the drawing that we're going to have on Friday. First place drawing will be a Mint State 62 $10 Indian gold piece, and the second place drawing will be a tube 1 ounce silver eagles. There's 22 a tube, so you're getting 20 ounces of silver. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188.
All right, this is the year for decision on Iran, says former IDF intelligence chief. IDF is the Israeli Defense Force. According to the Times of Israel, former Israeli Defense Force Intelligence Chief Amos Yadlin recently declared the coming year, that would be 2014, would be the year of decision for Israel. The next several months, he said, would provide the last opportunity for Israel to confidently and effectively strike Iran's nuclear program, if that's what it chooses to do. Yadlin, now the director of the Tel Aviv-based Institute for National Security Studies, was careful not to advocate an attack in the interview. And he made clear that Israel also has the option in the coming months to decide to leave the Iranian issue to the Obama administration, or Jerusalem could decide to live with a nuclear-capable Iran. So there's a couple options on this. But my point is, once again, we are listening to stories about, oh my gosh, Iran is going to have the nuclear bomb in just another couple of months. It's going to happen in just a couple of months. We've talked about this a little in the past. It winds up being they are crying wolf, and they are not crying wolf recently. There's an article from the Christian Science Monitor recently published, and the headline is Imminent Iran Nuclear Threat, a timeline of warnings since 1979. People have been warning about a possible nuclear threat from Iran all the way back into 1979, and that was when the Shah of Iran, who was our ally, was still sitting there. He was still in office. In the late 70s, again, the intelligence reported that the Shah had set up a clandestine nuclear weapons development program. 1979, the Shah was thrown out, but the Ayatollah, Ruhollah Khomeini, you remember him, all right, roundly castigated in this country. Nevertheless, he condemned nuclear weapons and nuclear energy, and for a time stopped all such products. 1984, West German engineers reported that West German intelligence reported that Iran's production of the bomb is entering final stages. U.S. Senator Alan Cranston claimed Iran is 7 years away from making the bomb. The point I have to make, this has been building now since roughly 1984. We've had over 25 years of people warning that, oh my gosh, Iran is going to have nuclear weapons, and it's going to be terrible, and it's going to be dangerous, and oh my gosh, the world will be completely destabilized for 25 years. Now, I don't doubt that. I'm not arguing that Iran should have nuclear weapons. I'm not arguing that the world's a better place if they get nuclear weapons. But I am arguing, first, the government should not be crying wolf and trying to get us to bomb or invade Iran every 6 months or a year for a quarter of a century. That's an exaggeration. They haven't tried every 6 months or a quarter of a year for a quarter of a century. But they've been at this on a regular basis for over 20 years. And once again, they're telling us, and number one, it's wrong for the government to try to manipulate public opinion this way. And number two, it is even more wrong for the American people to be foolish enough to go along with this manipulation. The reason the government is able to warn us every 6 months, oh, we've got to kill everybody in Iran because they're going to have nuclear weapons. We've got to kill them first. I've been doing it, why, for 25 years? Because American people don't pay attention. We listen to the crisis du jour, all right? And whatever the government tells us, if they come up with a new crisis every 60 or 90 days, we have forgotten the last one. And we tend to look at each one of these as a completely new report, and in fact, they're just replaying the same song that they've been playing for 20 years or more. You know, the thing about Iran, perhaps the most important thing is they haven't invaded or attacked a foreign country in several centuries. These are not an aggressive people. Now, this is not to say that they won't. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying if you can judge by history, it's pretty clear that the Iranians, you know, pretty peaceful, not inclined to attack anyone. They might have nuclear weapons that they can use for defense in order to intimidate people from attacking them. And on one level, you cannot blame them. If a foreign country was constantly claiming that we're going to have to attack Dallas, Texas, we've got to bomb Dallas, Texas, we've got to bomb Dallas, Texas with nuclear weapons because Dallas, Texas is almost ready to have nuclear weapons of its own. Well, after 25 years, you can see where the people of Dallas, Texas would eventually say, listen, we've got to get some nuclear weapons to keep these crazy guys from bombing us. We are most vulnerable when we don't have the nuclear weapons. The threats from our government and from Israel actually help cause Iran to think maybe we better get some nuclear weapons after all. This is one of those questions and problems that's intractable. It's difficult to understand what the truth is because we're involved with nuclear power. We tend to overreact. And rather than take a chance that Iran, might bomb Israel or might bomb the United States, we are prepared perhaps to destroy Iran or at least parts of it. And I don't have an answer for that. I don't have an answer because I don't know for a fact what's in the mind of the Iranian people and in the minds of the Iranian government. But it's another one of those instances where we are caught in circumstances that are just incredibly dangerous and subject to an irrational problem. Somebody does something stupid, not smart, not intelligent, not necessary, stupid. We could have a nuclear war break out in the Middle East. And God only knows where it goes from there. We certainly live in interesting times, and it's the sort of thing, again, this is one of those things that says, look, you better get ready, folks, because our circumstances are in some regards precarious. And while it may be that we're never going to see, maybe we might not see a real problem in my lifetime. That's possible. But in my opinion, it's more likely that we will see a real problem, although the magnitude, we don't know how bad it's going to be. It could be terrible. It could be merely aggravating and annoying. Hard to say how bad it's going to be. But in my opinion, we're going to see that kind of problem. And in the midst of that problem, with all of the problems we have and with how precarious everything is, the lesson again, better be prepared. What else do we have, Melody?
Well, you also have to ask yourself, both these... both people understand that if they create something or start something, I mean, they're going to be, you know, blown to blithering.
I understand.
Iranian, if they begin something, they know they're going to be, you know, blasted in the same way with Israel. So, I mean, that whole air is about to explode, and you have to ask yourself, is it all by design? I mean, we've certainly seen various parts that have been, you know, instigated by various groups. There's, you know, been, you know, certainly from various governments to create situations, to create the tension that's going on over there for various reasons. So it is dangerous. And
the people that are doing this are psychopathic.
And there are some, they're radicals.
You know, if you want to play Russian roulette and put a gun to your head and roll a cylinder and whatever and pull a trigger, if somebody wants to do that, I don't know, it's crazy, but if you want to do it, that's fine. But these people are playing Russian roulette with the world. They're threatening, they put a gun to the head of the whole world, and the damn fools are rotating the cylinder and getting ready to pull the trigger. They have a big laugh, a big joke, look. Do you see how those people jumped? Do you see how we terrify them? I don't know what the answer to this is. I don't have an answer because we are dealing with something about human nature. We're not just dealing with logic and reason and one thing and another. There is a peculiar bent in human nature that allows the lunatics to achieve great power and the psychopaths to achieve great power. And there's something about us as a species that's conducive to that. And in the past, it was bad, but it didn't threaten the world. Now you can threaten the world, and I'm not a pacifist. You understand? I'm not here. I'm not saying, oh, we need to all lay down our guns. And I said, that's not me. But I'm sitting here saying, this is nuts. This is crazy. And if anybody screws up, you know, there's going to be a lot of trouble. What else do we have, Melody?
Oh, let's see. You want to touch on Obama spying on heads of states?
Yeah, we can touch on that. It's just a brief comment. New York Times. Obama may ban spying on heads of allied states. Washington, President Obama is poised to order the National Security Agency to stop eavesdropping on the leaders of American allies, administration and congressional officials said. Monday, responding to a deepening diplomatic crisis over reports that the agency had for years targeted the cell phone chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany. So Obama says, listen, we're going to stop spying on the heads of state. Right? But you got to bear in mind that the heads of state, the Shah of Iran was once a head of state. And he's the guy who started making nuclear devices. He's the one who initiated the first nuclear weapons program, apparently, in Iran. And he was a United States ally. We don't know what Germany's doing. We don't know what France is doing, England's doing, the rest of that sort of thing. God only knows what kind of weapons they are devising or trying to devise on their own. But what we're saying is, well, we're not going to spy on them anymore. Right? Angela Merkel. I don't think she has access to any nuclear weapons. I don't think Germany does. I don't know, but I don't think that's true. Some of the other countries do. England does. France does. We're not going to follow people who have access to nuclear weapons, but... we are going to continue to spy on the American people. All right? It may be wrong for us to spy on the people of Spain and France and England and Portugal and so on, but it's still okay to spy on the American people. We won't spy on our foreign allies, but we will spy on our domestic what? our domestic taxpayers, our domestic supporters, our domestic serfs, our domestic subjects, our domestic slaves, what? The whole thing, another madness. We just keep going. They won't spy on Merkel, but they will spy on you and me. What sense does that make? You know? Where are we, Melody? 2 minutes to go, something like that?
Okay. Almost.
Hell, here's another one, and that deals with spying. This is from Reuters. This is interesting. Now, it's not compelling, but it's interesting. EU lawmakers seek to block U.S. financial spying. European Union, of course. This is from Reuters. The European Parliament called on Wednesday for U.S. access to a global financial database in Belgium to be suspended due to concern that the United States is snooping on the European Union, not just combating terrorism. Terrorism is the pretext for all this crap. You could probably take all the terrorists in the world and fit them on one medium-sized boat. All right. But you and I are going to be spied on because the terrorists are coming. The terrorists are coming. European lawmakers voted to freeze Washington's ability to track international payments because of suspicions that it has abused agreements, an agreement giving it limited access to the SWIFT database. Now, SWIFT is Society for Worldwide Internet Financial Telecommunications. And this entity is supposed to supply secure messaging services and interface software to wholesale financial institutions. This goes to the center of what's going on in the financial system in the world, and the European Union is voting to kick the U.S. out of access to SWIFT. Well, it's not going to happen. This vote, they have voted, but it's not binding. So it's not going to happen right now, but it's another illustration of the government's been caught with its pants down, spying on so many people, and more than a few people are angry. You should be angry too, ladies and gentlemen. It's not just for Europeans to get angry. It's up for Americans to get angry. Also, I'm going to get angry because we're out of time. And therefore, we have to say goodbye. I'm Alfred Adask here on Financial Survival with Melody Cederstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? But still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad. In my dream, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money.